Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Good morning. I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to NPR News. So glad you could join us today. So how is your heart health? Heart attack, stroke, and other kinds of heart disease are the leading cause of death for men and women. And high blood pressure puts us at a higher risk for these ailments. Overall, we've made some huge strides in preventing and treating deaths from heart disease. But Black Americans are 2 to 3 times as likely to die from a heart attack, heart failure, or other heart-related disease than white Americans. This hour, I'm talking with two cardiologists about the complicated reasons behind this disparity. And we'll also talk about some new approaches in Minnesota for lowering the risk of heart disease in Black communities. I want to hear from our listeners, all of you. Like, do you have questions or concerns about your risk for a stroke, a heart attack, or other type of heart disease? Have you been able to get your blood pressure under control or change your habits to lower your risk of heart disease? Tell us what's worked for you and what is still a challenge. What questions do you have for our doctors? The phone lines are open. Here are the numbers to call. You can call us at 651-227-6000. Again, the number is 651-227-6000. You can also call 800-242-2828. Tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. Let's bring in our two guests. We have on the line Dr. LaPrincess Brewer. Dr. Brewer is a cardiologist and assistant professor at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester. Her research focuses on heart disease prevention and testing new public health approaches to eliminate the racial disparities in cardiovascular disease. I'm so glad you could join us, Dr. Brewer. Also on the line, we have Dr. Courtney Jordan Beckler. Dr. Beckler is Medical Director of Health Equity and Health Promotion at the Minneapolis Heart Institute Foundation and Allina Health. She's also a cardiologist practicing with Allina Health. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Beckler.
So glad to be here, Angela. Thank you.
So, Dr. Beckler, I'll start with you. You know, what is it that you think, what is it about heart disease that really can make it different, maybe even more difficult to educate people about, and perhaps even more challenging to treat? What have you found?
Well, I think it's a complicated process in that it's really lifelong. You know, we start to see plaque develop as early as our teens and 20s that can subsequently lead to real significant heart disease and vascular disease. So because of that, it becomes this lifelong approach that starts with things that happen in our youth and go much through our 20s, 30s, 40s, and becomes something that requires a much more systematic approach to best meet the needs of our communities and individuals.
Mm. And Dr. Brewer, what have you found out about heart disease that maybe makes it a little bit different than some of the other conditions that it's very easy to talk about and that people seem to understand easily? Dr. Brewer? Okay, not hearing her right now. So, Courtney, I'll come back to you. It's really important, I think, to talk about high blood pressure and all of this. I know so many people with high blood pressure. I have high blood pressure. And as we talk about heart disease this hour, it's one of those conditions, the high blood pressure, that puts us at that increased risk of a heart attack and stroke. And so tell us, what does having high blood pressure do that puts you at this greater risk of disease?
Yeah, really great question, Angela. And thank you so much for sharing your own story, because I think that's a big piece of the solution is that we start to talk about these things earlier. So high blood pressure, what that does is it puts more stress on your arteries throughout your entire body. And then it also puts more stress on your heart because basically your heart has to work harder against higher levels of pressure. So you can almost think about it, you know, if you're thinking of water going through a garden hose, mm-hmm. if there's more pressure on that hose, if there's less relaxation of that hose, the water has to push harder. And our heart at a minimum usually beats 60 times a minute. You know, if our heart rate is higher, it's beating that much more. You can do the calculations that it's working really, really hard. And in this case, then that makes the muscle of the heart develop to be thicker because of that. And we don't want to see that over decades. That can lead to heart failure. Mm-hmm. High blood pressure can also lead to stroke. And I just want to point out to what you're saying, one of the things that we see is a lot of these things are developing in pregnancy. This is one of the areas of research that we're actively working on, and it's really kind of the first stress test, if you will, for heart disease. And this is a new area of research and study of a place where we could be intervening earlier to change disparities that we see later on.
So what happens in pregnancy as some women for the first time experience high blood pressure?
Exactly. So what we see in pregnancy is people can get what we call gestational high blood pressure, or pregnancy that develops high blood pressure that develops in pregnancy. We also see things like preeclampsia. And again, what we have found is that you're at much higher risk later of developing heart disease, and the importance then in your 20s and 30s in really mitigating that risk mm-hmm. is critical. So that was a project that we did this summer where we looked in our own population and saw, sure enough, we have upwards of 2/3 of our patient population that we haven't reduced that risk right there and then for generations and decades to come.
And yet preeclampsia is something I also had with the pregnancy of my son, something I had never heard of before, but have since learned a lot more about. I know that it's rare, but it has been such an education to learn how all of these things sort of tie together. Dr. Brewer, I hear we have you back on the line. We're having some technical problems. Can you?
Yes. Hi. Are you all able to hear me now?
I can hear you there at Mayo Clinic. So Dr. Brewer, to back up a little bit, when we talk about heart disease, you know, as a cardiologist, have you found some things that make it somewhat different or maybe more difficult to educate people about and maybe also more challenging to treat?
Yeah, I guess I wanted to somewhat focus on African-American women. Mm-hmm. And I'm just very passionate about increasing awareness about heart disease in women. Really, only about a third of African-American women even know that heart disease is their greatest threat. And heart disease is the number one killer of African-American women. And 1 in 2 African-American women who are age 20 or older have some form of heart disease. So I've really made it my passion to increase awareness about heart disease before even treating it. And about 50,000 African-American women die annually from heart disease. So this is a huge problem within our community.
So what is going on with Black women? Is it genetics? Is it the lifestyle? Why is that the case that Black women are much more likely to have cardiovascular disease?
So the reasons that women are dying younger, actually, from heart disease can be attributed to a higher burden of heart disease risk factors. I know we were talking about high blood pressure, hypertension, high cholesterol, diabetes, and obesity. And these risk factors are also developed in African-American women at younger ages. And as Dr. Backler mentioned, over time, these then can lead to heart disease. And African-American women are also faced with a number of unique stressors, really based on the intersection of their race and gender. And they're more likely to live in poverty than white women. And we as Black women are also 3 to 4 times more likely to die during pregnancy for heart-related causes. I know we were speaking about hypertension, gestational hypertension, and preeclampsia and eclampsia, mm-hmm. but we're also just more likely to die in general during pregnancy.
And, you know, the genetic component of this, and, you know, I shared I had preeclampsia. I currently have high blood pressure. What can you tell us about genetics?
Yes, there is a genetic link to, you know, some of the risk factors, including, you know, high blood pressure and diabetes. But I must say, all of these are modifiable and can be controlled with lifestyle change and the right medications. Mm-hmm. So although they do run in families, I don't like to look at them as, you know, I can't do anything about them if I am diagnosed with these. We can get them under control and prevent you from developing heart disease. Mm.
All right. If you're just joining us, we are talking about heart disease with two cardiologists. And I want to know, do you have some questions about your risk of stroke, heart attack, or other heart disease? Have you been able to get your blood pressure under control or change your habits to lower your risk of heart disease? Tell us what's worked for you and what is still a challenge. The phone lines are open. Call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. Let's take a phone call now from a listener in Minneapolis. Joe is on the phone. Good morning, Joe. And what do you want to share or ask?
Hi, doctor. I have a question. I'm 60 years old. My blood pressure's fine. My cholesterol is good. But I've had two brain surgeries for epilepsy. One was a craniotomy. One was a laser ablation. And I've wondered, should I assume that that may elevate the risk of stroke because there's been work done inside the brain a couple of times? Or would it be perhaps raised? You know, one is it they've cut away in there, so things have happened, or they've probably observed and would have known if there was a problem. Any indicators for two brain surgeries and its relation to stroke?
Dr. Brewer, any suggestions or ideas on what Joe may be facing?
Yes, thank you, Joe, so much for calling in and sharing your story. And I would say that it's more so about your risk factors and making sure that they're under control. Patients undergo, you know, surgeries both on their heart and, you know, their brain. But as long as we make sure that their risk factors such as high blood pressure, diabetes, and obesity are under control, we can prevent you from having a stroke or a heart attack. So it's not necessarily that your surgery would place you at a greater risk for stroke per se. I don't know all the details of your surgery, but I would really focus on maintaining a healthy lifestyle to prevent yourself from having stroke.
Dr. Beckler, I want you to help us with some of these terms. I think we're familiar with heart attack and what a stroke is, but could you tell us, you know, really define it for us? Like, what is a heart attack and what is a stroke, Dr. Beckler?
Yeah, absolutely. So these are terms that are often thrown out and super confusing to folks. A heart attack is usually defined as a blockage in one of your coronary arteries or heart arteries. And when we think of strokes, there's two different kinds of strokes. There's strokes in our brain that come from a dilation or a hemorrhage of our artery, which is it getting bigger and dissecting. And then the more common strokes that we talk about preventing are similar to what we see in the heart arteries, where we're talking about plugs or blockages in those vessels in our brain. So they have those similarities in that they have to do with, you know, crud, cholesterol, inflammation, all those things happening in those arteries.
And the signs and symptoms, how would I know if I were in the early stages of having a heart attack, Dr. Beckler?
Yeah. So these also, if you Google signs and symptoms of a heart attack, I often joke that we probably had one of them in the last week, all of us, because they're quite broad. The most common thing that people experience is chest pressure. And I often think we often say, have you had chest pain? And I've even started to reframe that when I'm speaking with patients, recognizing that it's often more of this pressure elephant sitting on your chest. Some people kind of describe feeling like they're in a vise and they can't get some air. And then some of the more atypical symptoms that are super important to recognize, but that you'll see on there, you know, arm pain, more common on the left, numbness in the arm, jaw pain, neck pain, back pain. In women, we sometimes see nausea, vomiting, shortness of breath. So it's very, very broad. And every once in a while, you'll see on these lists a sense of impending doom and this feeling that something is horribly wrong in your body. I can't emphasize enough, and I know Dr. Brewer would agree, that we want you to default, if you're having any of these symptoms, to getting checked out. And if you ever have a doctor dismiss you because it was a false alarm, that's not the right doctor for you. You always better to err on the side of caution when it's your heart, and make sure that there's nothing going on. That happens, but much better if you're having any of those signs or symptoms. People know their body well. To say, I want to get more answers.
I want to know that this isn't.
Right.
And Dr. Brewer, as I hear Dr. Beckler describe the signs and symptoms of a heart attack, we've also heard a lot of conversation how it can be different in what women experience and what men experience. And what can you tell us about that, Dr. Brewer?
Yeah, so as Dr. Beckler mentioned, the most common symptom of a heart attack is chest pain. However, women are more likely to experience other symptoms. So the dizziness, the nausea, the vomiting, shortness of breath, and back pain. So we have to be very mindful, you know, of our symptoms. And as Dr. Beckler mentioned, don't ignore them. Seek help, because you'd rather have a false alarm than, you know, something serious that could take your life.
Right. And a stroke. What is a stroke? And how is that, what's going on in the body when that happens, Dr. Brewer?
Yeah, so stroke is also a form of cardiovascular disease, and it really occurs when the blood supply to a part of the brain is cut off from a blocked blood vessel, similar to a heart attack where you have plaque buildup in the walls of the artery. And this causes some brain cells to die. And also a blood vessel can rupture or burst and cause bleeding in the brain as well. And this can then result in the loss of function of parts of the brain that affect our speech and our movements. So similar to a heart attack, time is brain. So if you experience, any symptoms, such as slurred speech or difficulty moving your limbs or facial drooping, you really need to present to get medical care at your emergency department.
I appreciate you both describing these symptoms and signs so clearly for us. Let's take some phone calls from our listeners as we talk about heart disease and what puts us at risk of heart attack or stroke or other forms of heart disease and what treatments are available. Call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. Let's take a phone call in Rochester from Thomas, who's calling in. Good morning, Thomas.
Morning. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm learning a lot.
Yeah, I am too, but I was just calling in to let you guys know that I'm a black male and I do have high blood pressure. And my wife didn't want me to get on blood pressure pills. So she went to the store and purchased some garlic. Mm-hmm. And that brought my blood pressure way down.
That helped. And so what is garlic? It's like a supplement, a nutritional supplement?
Yeah, just like a supplement, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Thomas, do you have a history of high blood pressure in your family?
Yes, my late mother was a high blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
I had high blood pressure.
And what, did she pass away as a result of heart disease?
No, not really and mm-hmm. stuff, but she just, had it and used, the prescribed pill to get it down and stuff.
Okay. So is your question, you want to know more about the medications that are available and if some of these supplements, you say that worked for you, but what's your question for the doctors?
Well, it wasn't just a question. I was just, letting you guys know that I am a black male and did have have high blood pressure.
And that
garlic did bring it down. So.
Did you do any other changes to your diet or anything else that you do, Thomas, or exercise
more? I have a pretty good diet anyway, but
okay.
I don't overeat and I don't always eat. So,
all right. Thank you. Dr. Brewer and Dr. Beckler, let's talk about this. He's saying he found success in lowering his high blood pressure with a supplement called garlic. Have you heard of that being successful in folks, Dr. Beckler?
Yeah, so a really great conversation, and thanks, Thomas, for calling in. So there are some supplements that have been shown to decrease blood pressure some small amounts. That way, they're not usually as effective as the medications that we prescribe. But here's what I want to say about this. we, over the last couple of years, particularly since George Floyd's murder, we've been working much more closely with our communities seeing the largest disparities, and particularly here in North Minneapolis. And what we heard over and over and over from community members is we want to know and understand what, in addition to medications and procedures, will lower our blood pressure. So because of that, we co-designed a study that we've just launched with Chance York, who's a local here, who's leading some work on meditation and yoga, specifically looking at blood pressure, quality of life. And where I'm trying to go with this is that I think this is one of the challenges that we're seeing with some of the disparities we have is we often go very quickly to what is evidence-based in guidelines, which is more often medications and is appropriate. But at the same time, I think we sort of need to meet people where they're at, have a information knowledge transfer both ways to say, at the end of the day, your blood pressure needs to be less than 120 on tap. There's a variety of ways to get there. And because of these things that we've discussed in terms of this being a lifelong process, I think that sometimes that isn't always done in a 15-minute process with the medication for everyone.
Dr. Brewer, we heard Thomas, our caller, there say his wife did not want him to take high blood pressure medication and recommended, you know, a supplement instead, which he said did help him. But what have you found in your research about this hesitation to take medication that targets high blood pressure?
Yes, I really, really appreciate, you know, Thomas calling mm-hmm. in and sharing his story about, you know, high blood pressure. I did want to mention, though, that, you know, this is a major issue in Black communities. And, you know, it's called the silent killer because it can cause permanent damage to the heart before you even notice any symptoms. So you may feel as if, oh, you know, I don't need to take any medications. You know, I can do, you know, a supplement. But untreated high blood pressure really increases your risk of heart attack, stroke, and other serious health problems. And, you know, Black communities have the highest rates of hypertension in the world. And I want to emphasize that again. Black communities have the highest rates of hypertension in the world. So this is astounding and unacceptable. And, you know, hypertension is more severe in Black adults than white adults. And it also develops earlier in life. So, you know, we have to detect it earlier and follow, you know, African-American patients closer and start them on medications as needed. And I'm glad to hear that, you know, our caller's blood pressures were under control with kind of more conservative measures. But, you know, over time, it may require medications because we, again, want to prevent, you know, heart disease from forming. Mm. And I also wanted to mention that, you know, the uncontrolled hypertension is not just, you know, a patient level factor, you know, of like not taking your medications. It also can be due to clinician related factors like, you know, inadequate treatment or not even putting patients on blood pressure medications when they need to be placed on them, or what we call inertia in which the treatments are not optimized to control blood pressures. And this is a huge issue in Black communities.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another phone call from a listener. As we talk about heart disease and the risk factors and medications to help control blood pressure, what questions do you have for our doctors? Call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. In St. Paul, Michael's on the phone. Good morning, Michael.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. What did you want to ask or share with us?
Yeah, I wanted to speak about my own personal experiences. I definitely agree with the Black population having a higher rate of heart issues and different things like that. What I've noticed is that growing up, you know, we just have different food choices and, you know, from cultural differences in how we decide to interact with people and, you know, the stressors of going to work every day and just living normal life in general is enough to, you know, put you under enough stress to have heart problems. Mm-hmm. What I've noticed about myself is that when I get real stressed out or when I'm under a lot of pressure, I either eat or I don't eat. So, like, I go through this up and down spike and, you know, in healthy choices, or I decide to like ignore my health problems.
Mm-hmm. You're not alone in that, Michael. And I should let you know, as we talk about, Black people and heart disease, I'm a Black woman. Dr. Brewer's a Black woman. Dr. Beckler's a Black woman. Both doctors, I want to ask you, what role does chronic stress seem to play in increasing blood pressure and other risks for heart attack and stroke? As Michael kind of notes, he has chest pains from time to time. What can you say to that, Dr. Beckler?
So here's what I would say is that when we look at the data and we slim down everything, so we look at education level, we look at income, all of these different things, we see that at the end of the day, there still is a disparity in outcomes for our Black Americans. And so we know that, unfortunately, because of systemic racism and walking through this world with extra stress, this is real. And I think that as Dr. Brewer has shown in some of the research that she's done, I think the best thing that we can do is start to combat it at each level and through changing what we have the ability to change, through knowledge, through changing the way that healthcare is delivered, where it's delivered. I mean, it's a complicated process, but I think this is absolutely true.
And so, Dr. Brewer, Michael talks about cultural, differences and diet and maybe also, weight, what we see in Black communities that's different than other communities. What role does all of that have to play in Black Americans being at a higher risk for heart attack and stroke?
Yes, this is extremely important. As, culture over time, we tend to follow a traditional Southern diet or a traditional cuisine, which may be high in saturated fat and sodium. And also there's a culture, and I see this amongst my own family members, that, heavier is better. And you don't have to always, exercise to lose weight or maintain a healthy weight. And we're working to change many of these cultural paradigms through some of the work that I'm doing with the African American community. And I have a program called FAITH. And FAITH is an acronym that stands for Fostering African American Improvement in Total Health. And it supports African Americans through Black churches in improving their heart health. And our approach is unique in that, as Dr. Beckler said, we are meeting patients and people where they are in their communities to collaboratively come up with interventions and solutions that are really relevant to their culture and social life and environments to help promote their heart health. And were you going to ask a question?
Yeah. So you've been going into Black churches. And so what have you learned from the study so far? Has it been successful in helping people maybe adopt some healthier habits?
Yeah, so we've had both in-person programming and that has been delivered through mobile technologies through a smartphone app, and we've had significant improvements in heart health. So we recently published a clinical trial that included 16 Black churches in Rochester and the Twin Cities, and we randomized churches to receive a culturally tailored smartphone app that we actually developed with African-American community members here in Minnesota. And we found that those who completed our 10-week heart health program on the app had significant improvements in their overall heart health scores as defined by the American Heart Association. And they were more physically active and they were eating healthier. So it really shows the power of partnering with community members to promote heart health as it builds a culture of health within the community.
And then they're able to share their stories with others. And so having those conversations can be really impactful, more than a study coming out saying, do this. If you know someone who's seen a change. Taking your phone calls back to the phone lines in Rochester, we've got Doug on the phone. Good morning, Doug. What do you want to tell us?
Good morning. I significantly lowered my blood pressure through diet. I gave up meat, dairy, and eggs about 3 years ago, and it really did help. Went from about 170 over 90 down to 116 over 67 at my last blood donation. So the blood pressure has been very good. A little bit of exercise, too. I walk about 3 miles a day. So
That's great, Doug. Thank you for sharing that. Doug in Rochester was able to bring his blood pressure down through diet change and a little bit more exercise. And is that a story you hear often, Dr. Beckler?
It sure is. So I specialize in prevention, and a lot of patients come to see me to look at things holistically. So what all can we do from a lifestyle perspective? And if necessary, what can we or what do we need to do with medications? But hands down, the vegetarian or vegan diet, the Mediterranean diet, and the anti-inflammatory diet all have great data showing reduction in blood pressure.
And he gave us his numbers, and I forgot to ask, what's the good number? What's the goal when we have our blood pressure checked? What do we want to see as that top number and bottom number?
Yeah, we want the top number to be less than 120. That's called the systolic. And then we want that bottom number to be less than 80. That's the diastolic. So that really is, just like Dr. Brewer was saying, that's what the data is. Anything higher than that really does start to put stress on our heart, on our blood vessels. And we do see, you know, if you look through our medical records, there's a lot of people walking around with 130s, 135s, and that, you know, they folks just kind of sit there for a while with those blood pressures. And again, we need to be intervening earlier. And like we said, lifestyle has a huge role, and there's a lot of opportunity there. But if we can't get it controlled with that, that's when it is time for something else.
Dr. Brewer, I know you need to leave us in a couple of minutes to get back to work. But before you do, I have a question for you about medical studies. We know that often white men are disproportionately represented in medical studies, and that has an impact. So do we see this in cardiovascular research as well?
Absolutely. And this is, you know, one of my goals is to increase diversity in our cardiovascular trials. As, you know, if we have more diversity, we then know how medications and treatments can work in specific populations, including women and racial ethnic minority groups. So we have to, it's imperative that we increase representation of women and people of color in these studies. And as you mentioned, traditionally, in our large population-based clinical trials, it's very homogenous and mostly white men. And many of our treatments are, you know, and doses are based off of these studies. So in order to increase diversity in clinical trials, we really have to start meeting women and people of color where they are in their social environments and really hone in on understanding, you know, their reasons for not participating in research-based interventions and studies. And this is the only way we'll really address, you know, whether there's some reluctance to participate and how to better tailor interventions and research to meet their needs. So as I mentioned with our studies, we actually go out into the community and educate the community on the research process and how the data from clinical trials and research can then be used for their benefit. And they are contributing to society at large by participating in research.
Well, Dr. Brewer, I know you're going to get back to work there at Mayo Clinic. And I just want to thank you for the research that you are doing and the education that you're doing in our community. Thank you for joining us today. We've been talking with Dr. LaPrincess Brewer, a cardiologist and assistant professor at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester. We'll let you go, Dr. Brewer.
Thank you so much for having me. Take care.
All right. But we're continuing the conversation. I want to take more of your phone calls and continue on with Dr. Beckler, who's on the line, also a cardiologist. Back to the phone lines in Eagan. Sarah. Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
Is on the line. Hi, good morning. What did you want to share with us about heart disease?
Yeah, sure. So I have a question for cardiologists that, mm-hmm. So usually we go through the annual checkup and we get our cholesterol numbers and blood pressures. Mm-hmm. And if somebody is on the radar to get the diabetes A1C number. And I know my father, he had pretty much everything normal. And then diabetes was on the border. But he ended up getting heart attack last mm-hmm. year. And he ended up going bypass. And a couple of arteries were 100% blocked. So my question is that in an annual checkup, that's what we do regularly. Now, in spite of your cholesterol being normal, which I have seen my normal. How do I know my what is the state of the cholesterol in my heart? Okay. Because when I asked this question to my doctor, and she said that, it doesn't tell, the cholesterol number doesn't tell that what is the state of your heart. So, but this seems like a very important thing, and which we are not regularly checking, I guess.
Okay, so you want to make sure, so your father had a heart attack, and you want a clearer picture on what you can do to see, you know, how your heart health is looking, and what's the role of cholesterol. Dr. Beckler, can you help Sarah?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your call, Sarah, and your question. So you're absolutely right. Cholesterol is just one component of all this, and you can have, this is not uncommon, to have normal cholesterol levels and still have heart disease. So a couple of things to think about. One, most people, of course, it's always difficult to say conclusions about insurance coverage, but most people are able to see a cardiologist that specializes in prevention like myself, where we take together your whole history and look at how best we define your risk going forward. Oftentimes in 2022, that might include something like a calcium score, which is a newer test that we do that takes a picture of your heart arteries and gives us a percentage, a plaque, which is different than narrowings in your arteries, but it shows us, do you or don't you have the beginning of plaque and narrowings in your arteries for us to be more aggressive in prevention. So, but again, these are more advanced things that I think people should know about, that these are options. It's not uncommon for me to see 20-year-olds with strong family histories of heart disease that want to really get on board with what they can do to prevent this long term.
Let's take another phone call from a listener as we talk about heart disease and how to prevent it. In Orono, David's on the phone. Good morning, David.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
Actually, this is a perfect segue, I believe. I have a strong history of cardiovascular disease in my family. Lost 3 grandparents to strokes. Mm. Lost an uncle at 50 to a heart attack. Lost a brother at 53 to a heart attack.
I'm so sorry.
As a result, I went and got tested, did the calcification score, had a score of 55, so I have heart disease. I don't have some of the other issues. I don't have high blood pressure, but I do have high cholesterol, so they put me on a preventative statin. My question isn't really about me. I kind of know that picture. My question is about my children. I have 3 children, one that is 27, one that is 24, and one is 20. What can we really do now to try and reduce their risk long term?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the question I'm asking.
Excellent question. David has kids in their 20s that we've talked about this genetic component to heart disease. So, Dr. Beckler, and your work in prevention, what do we know? Folks who know they have this family history of heart disease, what can they be doing in their 20s to put themselves in a better position?
So I can't emphasize enough, if those were my children, I certainly would have them in with the preventive cardiologist in their 20s, focusing on all these things to have an individualized approach of what's going to best meet their needs. And it varies in terms of for women still going through and having children and being in their reproductive years, that approach might be slightly different in terms of medications that are used or not. But again, I think having a better understanding to look at various blood markers and potentially tests, and then really, really, really emphasizing the lifestyle. For all of our listeners, I would just want to be clear that, yes, it's how we move our body. It's how we eat. It's also how we sleep. It's also the way that we deal with stress. We can't get rid of stress, but having an active strategy for stress makes a huge difference. All of those pieces are part of the puzzle as it relates to heart disease. And so there's a lot that we can do. And I personally, my mother lost her father when he was 49 and she was 9. And I get this. It's hard to have families go through this, but there's a lot of action that we can take. And just would give a shout out to our health equity fellow, Delaine Thomas, who said it might not be our fault, but it is our responsibility. And I think that's a huge piece of we know so much more now. There's so much more action we can take if we get that knowledge to you, the larger we, communities, health systems, mm-hmm. policymakers.
And Dr. Beckwith, we should mention you're doing a study right now on yoga here in the Twin Cities.
Yes.
How did that come about, and what does yoga have to do with preventing heart disease?
Yeah, so again, this was a study that CVS Aetna helped fund, and in part this came from their Black Professional Resource Group, who said, we want to do more to lower our risk of heart disease. And there are some studies that have been done showing how yoga and meditation and helping calm really decreases some of these risk factors we've been talking about long term. So this study that we're doing, we limited only to people of color. It's taught by a person of color, who Chance York, in our community here, and it's all done virtual. So we're doing this across the country. I would, to make it easy for folks, which is part of where I was going with this. And what I would emphasize is this came from us going out in the community, meeting with community members, asking what people wanted and meeting them where they were at to say, free, accessible, taught by people who look like community members to make it more inviting. And we'll be looking at validated measures of quality of life, both physical and mental, and blood pressure, and also sense of belonging pre and post this 10-week study. But I think that's just a critical mm-hmm. piece going forward of getting rid of some of these barriers.
I'm glad to know we know more, and there's more interest in preventing heart disease, and we're learning new ways to do that. Let's take another phone call from a listener in Chisholm. Tim's on the line. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's going on with you?
Yeah, I had 4 years ago, I had a stroke while I was in surgery. Mm-hmm. And now I am on blood thinners and blood pressure medicine. Mm-hmm. My question is, does anybody ever get off of them, or is that something pretty much all I'll have to take the rest of my life? I will be 65 in a month, and I don't like taking medicines to begin with. So, okay.
So you're on two different types. One is a medication, a blood thinner, and another one is to treat the high blood pressure?
Correct.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that it sounds like you're doing better.
Yes, I'm doing okay.
I'm doing okay. But we want to get off of those pills. What do you say to him, Dr. Beckler?
Yeah, really great question. Thanks for calling in, Tim. A challenge with a lot of our medicines, many of them are often lifelong. Now, sometimes there are all sorts of different situations that sometimes people are on less medicines because of these different changes that we were talking about in our lifestyle that can decrease doses sometimes. But what I would emphasize in your situation, if you have had sometimes a more serious stroke, while we're all together and none of us want to be on medications, even us doctors that prescribe them, I can't emphasize from a medical perspective that sometimes what you're mitigating is a more significant stroke by being on those medicines. And so particularly the blood thinners, that they sometimes then help mitigate the likelihood that you would have a stroke that leaves you impaired, perhaps not being able to walk or talk. And that's the challenge that, well, I appreciate not wanting to be on a medicine. That's often what it's helping lessen that risk. So it's complicated, but sometimes they are, in fact, lifelong.
And I've heard, I know people who had strokes during a surgery. How common is that, Dr. Beckler?
Yeah, it depends on the surgery. It depends on the risk profile of the patient, but it can happen. Certainly with cardiac procedures, it's something that we try to inform patients of is a risk. We try to mitigate that, but yeah, it does sometimes happen that way.
Let's talk with another listener, this time in Red Wing. James is on the phone. James, thank you for waiting. And what is your question, or what did you want to share with us?
I got some very, very good healthy tips. Yes, I experienced congestive heart failure a few years ago. But thanks to the Mayo Clinic for all the effort they did to make me a normal person like it never even happened. All you ladies who are African American, I got some very, very healthy tips for you. Each night before you go to bed, have an avocado or two and three cinnamon capsules, and you will decrease your diabetes. You will find yourself less weight, uh-huh. and you'll be doing your heart better. And also in the morning hours, have a couple ginger tablets along with a glass of almond milk with your coffee, mm-hmm. and you'll feel like you have the power on the tower every hour.
Okay. Yes. All right, James, let me ask the doctor about this. And he's okay, now he's saying avocados, he said cinnamon, ginger, and almond milk. Dr. Beckler, we talked about dietary changes that can help. Anything that James mentioned just there that you would say, yeah, I've seen some evidence that these things can be helpful. Dr. Beckler?
Yeah, I love it. I love James' excitement around all of this.
He's trying to help us.
Everything that he, mm-hmm. yes, he mm-hmm. is. So everything that he described is anti-inflammatory. And again, if people look at this anti-inflammatory diet, it's made up a lot of those foods. So again, it may not always be a substitution for a medication, but it absolutely is going to help. And I just want to pull out a theme here, Angela, because we've heard so much of this from our callers, right? There's so much confusion. What should I be doing? What shouldn't I be doing? And I think one of the things that's going to really make a difference in these disparities long term is to be partnering with trusted sources in communities experiencing the largest disparities. I'm so thankful for our partnership with Batala and Al McFarlane, Al, who started Insight News, and the work that we are really trying to do through a podcast we've developed where we're only sharing stories of people of color and their experience with prevention, treatment, things that went right, things that went wrong in the Twin Cities today. And I just think this is part of the solution, is how we better partner with communities and sources like Insight and yourself, who've been doing this work for decades successfully.
So it's important, like, what a conversation can spark. I mean, it's always our goal is just like, let's start the conversation and hope that people will continue the conversation within their homes, among their family members and friends. And just we're seeing some great strides. A lot of work is being done to just educate each other. And folks like you, Dr. Beckler, and Dr. Brewer, who are doing this research and really trying to talk to people where they are. I just appreciate that. Our time is up for the hour, but I want to thank our listeners who shared their questions and their advice. And our guests that we this hour, earlier, we heard from Dr. LaPrince's Brewer, who's a cardiologist and an assistant professor at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, and she's doing research. Her research focuses on heart disease prevention and testing new public health approaches to eliminating those racial disparities in cardiovascular disease. And Dr. Courtney Jordan Beckler, a cardiologist here in the Twin Cities and the medical director of health equity and health promotion at the Minneapolis Heart Institute Foundation at Allina Health. Thank you, Dr. Beckler. Thank you, Dr. Brewer. Today's conversation was produced by Maya Backstrom. Be safe. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 9. Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder that if you want to catch my show in real time, tune in and call in weekdays at 9 a.m.